Welcome to The Books We Loved, a podcast through the Troy Public Library. Today we are talking about the Bridget Jones franchise. We're here with Manda.
Hello.
And Karen from Adult Services.
Hello.
And we're just going to jump right in. We decided to do this improv style. We're just going to talk about our feelings. We read the book. We watched the movie. Karen picked this one. Do you want to tell us a little bit about why you picked it, your history with it, why it matters to you?
Sure. So I watch the Bridget Jones Diary movie every Christmas. For whatever reason, it feels like a Christmas movie to me, probably because it starts around the holidays. So I watch it every year, but I haven't felt the need to reread the book. So the first time I read it, it was probably like 99 or 2000. So like when I was like 19 or 20, and I absolutely loved it, felt like I could completely relate. This time around, when I started to reread it, it was a do not finish for me.
Okay.
I was surprised at how much I did not want to continue reading the book when I love the movie so much.
Okay. What do you think the difference was for you?
Okay. So I understand it still incorporated the fact that she's not happy with her weight in the movie, but it was really difficult to just see in writing every day of her journal entries. She includes her weight, how many calories she ate, how many cigarettes she smoked, and how many drinks she consumed. And for me, it just felt a little like, well, personally, it felt a little triggering, but also it brought me back to that time in my life where I was doing those same things. And for me, that was not a good path.
Yeah.
So it was a do not finish, but the writing is still really clever. I was very surprised to see how much the movie basically uses all the dialogue in the first chapter of the book. I mean, it's almost verbatim.
So I did not care for the book for the same reasons. I feel like it did not age well, but I do think she's a very likable character. I think she's very funny. There are things that I feel like get lost in translation in the movie a little bit, but I'm with you. I don't care for the book, but I love the movie. I remember seeing it for the first time and feeling like, oh my gosh, it's so nice to have a single person that's kind of in the same place as me. Although I think I was like 20 when I saw it, not in my 30s, but I remember watching it over the decades, and 20 years later, I still watch it and I still laugh at the same scenes. And there are some things that now definitely are a little cringeworthy for me, but overall, I still love the movie. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'll be the one that defends the book or likes it. I know we're not like, we don't need to defend it.
You don't need to defend its honor.
Yeah. Like I pick pistols. Do you want pistols or swords when we duel for the movie's honor?
Indiana Jones whips.
Oh.
To quote Bridget, I choose vodka and Chaka Khan. That is how I will duel you.
Good one.
Jesus, Karen, I just took a huge gulp of coffee. It almost like went up my nose.
I'm sorry. That's just my favorite line. I love it so much. Good.
Yeah. So I listened to the book, and I had listened to it when I was young, probably not long after it came out, probably a little longer after. When did it come out?
It came out in 1996.
Okay, so probably not that much longer than I was 10, so probably in my teens I listened to it. I remember like on my portable CD player walking around my parents' backyard listening to it, and I liked it, and nothing about it seemed problematic at that time. I was like, yep, this is how it is. And part of that was probably because I was a teenager, and part of it was because I was in that culture. And we revisit a lot of media from those early 2000s, late 90s.
Yeah, it seems like that's something that comes up for us on the show.
We're using this as therapy to process our trauma, having lived through that time. It was a rough time. And some of the themes in Bridget Jones are things like, yes, she's very concerned with her weight and quote-unquote self-improvement, and it's played for laughs, I think. She's sort of unsuccessfully trying to better herself in these very quantitative ways. Like, she has smart goals. She's just not meeting any of them, you know? They're measurable, but she doesn't ever achieve any of her goals.
She does get a better job.
She does.
She does.
And I love that.
That's one of the – I was reading some reviews, and one of them said – that was one time where you see her actually make a choice for herself and
stick with it.
And it changes her life. So I did like the book. I loved the reader. I thought the reader performed the book very well. It is a book that is definitely of its time and a reflection of its time. I would say to the idea that it doesn't age well, There's some racial things in it. That's like, okay, this did not age well.
And I guess I should have been more specific. There are certain like race jokes, you know, LGBTQ jokes that were okay. You know, they were still wrong, but as a society, we were okay with them. They were accepted. That's a better way to say it. They were accepted. So that's the stuff that kind of makes me cringe and uncomfortable. But go ahead. Sorry.
It's one of those books that I think is a reflection of its time rather than an endorsement of it.
Yeah.
Like tracking her calories. There is a part toward the end of the book that I thought was redemptive where she's talking to her best friend, Tom. And so in the book, she has these best friends that she hangs out with a lot in the book. I think that was a little lost in the movie. They're still there, but they just kind of had to be cut for time because the romantic relationship was so centered in the movie. That was something that I felt kind of was lost in the movie that I really liked in the book. And she has this friend, Tom, and he sort of says that he wants to go on a diet. And he asks how many calories people eat when they're on a diet. And she says a number. And he is surprised and says, well, I think that's less than you need. Don't you need 2,000 calories just to like survive? Mm-hmm. And she's gobsmacked by this because she says, this whole time I thought that any amount of calories was bad. Like I forgot that calories were for survival. And that I had been convinced. And she doesn't go in, you know, she's not super self-reflective in that way. She's not going to go into it in big time. But I thought that was at least a commentary on the weight thing because, yeah, that is very triggering, the whole calories, the saying the exact weight that she is, which I think everybody who talks about Bridget Jones is like, oh, my God, she's a perfectly healthy weight. Do we need to talk about any amount of calories? We don't do that in books anymore for a good reason. And
oh, I was, like, obsessed with those kind of books when I was in my early 20s. Like, there was one called Wasted, I think, where it was someone who had an eating disorder. There was one by Lori Gottlieb where she talked about her eating disorder, and I was fully in it at that age. So I read a lot of those kinds of books, and yes, unsurprisingly, I have no interest in rereading them now.
Makes sense.
But I think I don't know if any of you have read the second Bridget Jones book.
No, I've seen the movie.
Okay, so I read the second book, and, you know, there's some ridiculous hijinks with her mother and that kind of thing. But there's also, like, I want to say it's been a while, but there's a scene where she's wearing something, like, corseted. So she doesn't want Mark to touch her. There's a whole, like, storyline where he thinks that she's pulling away from him. So I hated that in the second book, she's still letting her weight and how she feels about her body, like, get in the way of having, like, a healthy relationship.
Not having read the book but seen the movie, I remember it sort of opens, or very early on, there's a scene where they stay the night together and obviously have had some grown-up interactions, and she's getting up in the morning and she doesn't want him to see her by the light of day. So in the movie, she's trying to wrap the sheet around her body as she's getting up. And it's like, it's exactly that thing, and it stays. I feel like it's not as bad in the third movie now. I didn't read the books, but yeah, that idea, it's still kind of rolling with you. But I liked that they kept that stuff in, because for me, it felt more actual, like this would be something you would be concerned about, because it seems ridiculous, but it seems plausible to me because I've done stuff like that.
I think it comes down to how we process that kind of trauma too.
Yeah.
Like some people like to play it for laughs because the laughter seems to heal. It's like laughing at something to take away its power.
Sure.
But some people don't like that. So, you know, it's not funny.
My thing has always been, especially with like weight or certain things that I don't like about myself, if you make the joke first, nobody can make fun of you, because I've already pointed out the things I don't like. And I still do that. I'm 43 years old, and that's still like a coping mechanism that is years of therapy has not removed, right? It's like we have those traumas and those things that, you know, they play for laughs in the movies and things, but sometimes it's like comedy's comedy because it's rooted in something truthful.
Right.
Right. They say something like 75% of the joke is actual.
Yeah.
So I think about that a lot when people say certain things. So especially if it's self-deprecating, it's like, oh, that really actually bothers you probably.
I'm reading this.
Well, we're getting really deep with Bridget Jones, right?
This is really bringing up something for me, because I just read Get the Life You Want by Arthur C. Brooks. It was like a, he's like a social scientist kind of guy. But he was talking about happiness And, you know, it's tricky to measure happiness even in like a scientific way, but they try. And one of the studies that he references is people who enjoy humor versus people who create humor mm-hmm. and their levels of happiness. And the people who enjoy humor, who watch a lot of funny stuff, who like to laugh, all that, are generally happier people. But like comedians, people who create it and mm-hmm. turn their like pain into, are usually yeah. less happy than.
I'm thinking about people that handle it with drugs or alcohol or whatever. Right. I think of Chris Farley. I think right. of Robin Williams. I think of Richard Pryor. I think of
Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, all these people that you are super funny, but it is coming from some painful place,
yes.
and that's your personal therapy,
your coping mechanism.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely agree with that. So
I think when I was reading the second book, I was also very young. And I think in my little early 2000s brain, I was like, I would hope that if I would meet someone who loved me just the way I was, then I wouldn't have to worry about, you know, my weight and that suddenly all those images, mm-hmm. all those negative body images would just disappear.
But yes.
Which, you know, in actuality, that's
don't.
Not how it works. Right. But I think that's why when I was younger and I read it, I was just so disappointed. I'm like, but she got the guy and he likes her the sure. way she is. Why does she?
Trauma, baby.
Yeah. It made me sad.
That's how you know you have a good egg when they reinforce that the horrible things you think about yourself are not in fact true.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, let me give a little background information on Bridget Jones, because I did some research. This was actually pretty interesting how this story came to be. There's an independent article called The True Story of Bridget Jones. And the Independent is a publication newspaper. And they came up with an idea. They pitched this idea that they wanted a column, fictional, about a young professional woman, which was really zeitgeisty in the 90s, like these mm-hmm. single power
women. This is pre-Sex in the City.
Yeah,
by a
exactly.
couple of years.
Yep. And so they asked Helen Fielding, who was, she worked in TV. She'd been working in TV for 10 years. She made films for comic relief. She'd written a novel. So she had this body of work and they were impressed with it. So they asked her if she would write this fictional column. And she was like, I got this. This is right up my alley. Mm-hmm. So they printed the column in February of 1995, and it started right in Bridget's life. Like, they didn't do any introduction or preamble. It was just her diary right away. And her Fielding's name didn't appear, so people didn't know if it was a real diary or not.
Oh, interesting.
That's fun. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
So people started writing in. Women loved it. And Helen Fielding was living the kind of Bridget Jonesy 30-something mm-hmm. professional lady life. And she and her single girlfriends would go out and drink and have fun in the city and talk about their failed relationships. And she says, quote, there was a sense of good female company being better than bad male company. And so that's the language that came up in it, like the singletons or the smug marrieds were all things that they said among their friendships.
I love it.
That's why I missed that part in the movie. I wish there had been more like friendship-y mm-hmm. stuff. I understand.
Less of a rom-com, more of, well, keeping it a rom-com, which it is, but just the rom-com with more friendship.
Maybe I
like
wanted
make
sex
it a half
an
hour
city.
Longer.
Maybe that's what I wanted. I wanted a friendship
want
story with like
with the side exactly.
Yeah. I will say though, I was just looking it up. Candace Bushnell. I read her Four Blondes.
Oh yeah,
it's a lot darker than
yes.
Bridget Jones.
Yeah. It is dark.
It. I mean,
is Four Blondes what Sex and the City was based on?
I don't know if it's that book specifically or okay. if that was just like it had similar storylines.
Okay.
But it was pretty dark. And I loved Sex and the City, the TV show.
Oh, mm-hmm. I did too.
But yeah, I was surprised in the book how late Mark Darcy came into play, like mm-hmm. how little he was really in it. It was mostly yeah. just Bridget and her crazy parents. Amanda, do you want to
talk? Which I love that. I'm sorry. Their relationship and how insane her mother is.
She's real crazy.
But it's
I love the cast that is in the movie too.
Yes.
The parents.
They
I love
soften
both
it.
Those actors so much.
I mean, it's just, it's so perfect because we cannot pick our families.
No.
And just trying to navigate all of the horrible things that come out of her mother's mouth while
oh,
she's,
God.
And then, you know, she's hungover and
right.
going to the turkey curry buffet.
Oh, gross. That just, I don't like curry. So every time I hear that and I think of being hungover and eating curry, I'm like, oof, that does not sound good to me.
Blarg.
That sounds like a bellyache. Mm. Did you say blarb?
I said blarg.
Oh, blarg.
Like in a comic book.
Blarg. Okay, so one thing I wanted to acknowledge. So if you haven't seen the movie, read the book, it's sort of a modern retelling slightly of Pride and Prejudice, right? Bridget yes. Jones is the Elizabeth Bennet kind of character, and they even named the guy Mark Darcy after Mr. Darcy. So one thing that I feel like got lost in the switch from the book to the movie is in the book, some of the characters felt more recognizable, retellings, modern retellings of characters from Pride and Prejudice, and I'm thinking of the mom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The mother in the book is such a ridiculous modern version of the mother in Pride and Prejudice. Who is this ridiculous, laughable character where you're like, oh my God, you need to not say those things in front of people. Yes. I can't believe you think that. I can't believe you said that out loud, you know? So that was when I listened to it recently for this podcast. I was texting, I think, Olivia that weekend, and I'm like, oh my God, the mom. There were so many parts that I made notes about in my personal copy, which I, of course, forgot today, where she says stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, and I'm listening to it and listening to it, and I'm like, oh my God, she's the mom from Pride and Prejudice. Yes. So I wish that they would have kept her a little bit crazier and more ridiculous in mm-hmm. the movie. I feel like they tamed her down in the movie. She's still out there. She's having, like, her later life crisis and, you know, taking a break from Bridget's dad and trying out other dudes and doing grown-up stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I had to acknowledge that. That was such a strong thought to me. When it hit me, I was like, oh, lightning bolt.
Were you the one that said she's a combination of Lydia and Mrs. Bennet?
Yes.
That's definitely true.
Yes, because she's got the Mrs. Bennet ridiculous factor. Yeah. And then she has the Lydia bad sense of relationships, right? Like the guy yeah. that she gets involved with in the book, you wind up finding out he's like some sort of criminal. Mm-hmm. And not that, what's his name? Wickham, right? Wickham? Yeah. I'm confusing my Jane Austen's. Yeah, it's Wickham that mm-hmm. she, yeah. So Lydia, the one sister in Pride and Prejudice, runs off with Mr. Wickham, and he's not technically a criminal, but he has done some very awful things in the past, tried to get someone to marry him for their money, and also run up all these debts, right? So she kind of, the mom in the book, has the perfect Lydia, yeah. Mrs. Bennet combination.
Yep, she almost ruins their family financially, mm-hmm. and Darcy has to save them.
Which, again, in the book, if everything had fallen through and the police that came to get the guy thought she was actually part of his misdeeds, she could have ruined their family too. Right. So they kind of kept that element in there.
What do you think about Hugh Grant in the movie or that character?
I think he's perfect.
Yes, he was such a cad in the 90s when he got caught with that.
That's in the
sex
book.
Worker, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They Which I was like, this meta. Is perfect. This is perfect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's peak Hugh Grant, in my opinion, yes. where he's playing the cad.
And also just perfect because he played in some of the Jane Austen movies, right? He was in Sense and Sensibility. And so for him to be kind of in it and then a modern retelling of one of Jane Austen's, that kind of felt fitting. But yeah, the fact he plays a good freaking villain.
Yes.
My favorite line in
Paddington
the movie.
Paddington 2, if anyone's seen that.
Nope.
I heard that was so good. And
oh my
I've
God,
never seen
so
it.
Good.
I need Everybody to watch those now. I haven't even seen the first Paddington.
You don't need to see the first one.
Just watch the second one yes. with Hugh Grant. He, the line in the movie, and I think it's in the book too, where she lists in her diary the kind of guy she doesn't want to be with. And I'm not going to list it all because there's a F-bomb in there, but nitwits.
Alcoholics.
Perverts, alcoholics, you know, all these, she doesn't want to date any of these types of men. And she winds up, of course, being with Hugh Grant's character. And he is a little bit of all of it, right? He's just an absolute rogue.
Mm-hmm. He's a cad.
So he's a cad.
He's a rounder. I'm going to read if you want, I don't know if I should read this. Is this going to upset anybody?
Nope.
It's a Guardian article called Bridget Jones's Diary Review, Broadly Enjoyable Knockabout Sitcom-y Picture. By Peter Bradshaw. This was written in 2001, and he has a very long, if you just kind of want to remember what the early 2000s were like and the kind of things people
Ooh,
were
can't
writing
wait
out.
Read it.
Yeah. Okay. This is an excerpt that I pulled from the article where he writes about Bridget Jones's body, Renee Zellweger's body. Her weight gain is a thing of joy. Her cheeks have become plump, hamsterish, pushing her mouth into a continuous, unsexy pout of anxiety and self-reproach. Her thighs are massively dimpled, and her great bottom is as stately as a sinking galleon, and it's always in our face.
Wow. Don't hold back.
Particularly when Bridget wears a bulging Playboy bunny outfit to her mother's Vickers and Tarts party. It is a quintessentially English bottom, which should by rights be encased in an unflattering netball skirt. And then he goes on to say that every character, including Bridget, isn't as good as the Hugh Grant character, who he thinks is the best person and the most fun and funny character.
Tell me what kind of a man you are without telling me what kind of a man you are.
Peter Bradshaw.
Gross.
I mean, Renee Zellweger looks like a
normal body. Normal.
I know it's not right for me to comment on anyone's body, but Renee Zellweger looked hot in that bunny costume.
She oh my sure God. Did. She
so
totally
whatever.
Did.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I'm sorry.
I will say, I like to look at Roger Ebert reviews of movies that we think of as classics. If you're ever bored, it's really funny. He hates
everything that I like.
Movie. But he gave Bridget Jones 3.5 stars
out of 5.
Yep. And okay. He said, glory be, they didn't muck it up.
That's generous from him.
Yes, he really liked it. He said the movie strings together one funny set piece after another. When Bridget goes in costume to a party where she thought the theme was Tarts and Vickers, or when she stumbles into a job on a TV news show and makes her famous premature entrance down the fire pole, or when she has to decide at the beginning of an evening whether sexy underwear or tummy crunching underwear will do her more good in the long run. Bridget charts her own progress along the way, from tragic spinster to wanton sex goddess, and the movie gives almost unreasonable pleasure as it celebrates her bumpy transition. Mm-hmm. So he liked it. Thanks,
it's pretty Maddie. Generous.
I love how quirky and like lovable she is with her imperfection. I think Renee Zellweger just knocked it out of the park.
She totally did.
I love that character. Like, if you're going to tell me to choose between Zooey Deschanel and her brand of quirkiness and Same. Bridget Jones, I think I'm more in the Bridget Jones camp.
Every time.
Same.
In the movie, watching it through my 20s and 30s, I found her very likable because I felt like I was that super kind of awkward that the movie caught in certain scenes, like when she's at her work party and she's trying to socialize and she's talking to Salman Rushdie. I think she walks into his group and she's pretending to have heard the joke. So she's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And they're like, what do you think about that? And she's like, do you know where the toilets are? I feel like that would 100% be me. So yeah. I love those things. When I still watch it, there's still those moments. There's a scene I have to walk out of the room every time because it makes me so uncomfortable. It's when she is going to announce Mr. Fitzherbert. And she has a nickname for him that I'm not going to say on the podcast. And when she goes to introduce him at this huge function for this publishing company, she in her head keeps shouting the name at herself. That is the kind of dirty moniker she came up with. That scene makes me so uncomfortable. I have
don't
to walk
it,
out of the room.
Say don't say it.
No, I have to walk out of the room because I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch this again. There's a scene in Bridesmaids where I have to do that too. It's like, oh, there's certain scenes I can't.
But I like it when they show her doing like karaoke at the work party where she's obviously a terrible singer and has a drink in hand.
Overserved.
Yeah. And I just think it's fun because that she's okay with being herself to, you know, at least personality wise, even if she wants to change her body, she is okay with
she gets
the multitudes that she contains. And I love that.
Yep. Yeah. You know, you always are pretty confident that she's going to be okay. Even when she's self-deprecating or when she goes through, it's usually like the spirals, the emotional spirals are a little melodramatic. Even she probably knows it. And so you feel confident that she's always going to be, she's going to bounce back because she does. She'll have a diary entry where everything is horrible. Her entire life has fallen apart. And the next one will be like, excellent day today. Like she just, and I loved that. I loved, there are parts of the book that made me laugh out loud. Like when there's a part where he disappears. Turns out because of a botched nose job that she and her friends are very worried. And she finds herself really enjoying the time where he's disappeared and nobody knows where he is because she's in the center of all this drama and she gets to be the best friend. And she's like thinking about what his funeral would be like and how everyone would be doting on her and how like she's very intuitive. And this other friend calls the police and she's like sort of put out by that because she's like, I'm the best friend.
Did either of you guys keep a diary?
Oh,
growing up or in your juicy 20s?
Yes.
Do you still keep one as well, Karen, or have you stopped?
No, and I don't have any of my old diaries, thank God.
Oh, Karen, no.
I have about Olivia, 40 volumes.
I think we need to get them out and read some of the ones, especially from the late 90s, early 2000s. There's some whoppers in there I'm embarrassed about.
Oh, I finally got rid of all my high school poetry, within the last 10 years. I was like, horrible. Oh, I got to get rid of this.
I told both my best friend Lisa and my brother, when I die, if it's sooner rather than later, all my journals are to be held and given to my one niece when she turns 21. And I'm like, go to town. You can see the real me. Like, you can see. I'm like, I don't care. I'll be dead. What do I care about?
I mean, did you guys also have live journals?
No, I never did journal. That.
You didn't, get into live journals in the 2000s?
Is that like a web blog?
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a blog, but it wasn't like a live like video. Well, was this
No. Live journal was, it was like MySpace, but it was, there were online blogs. It was called
like a Tumblr. No. Yeah. Oh, I had a blog on
Blogspot. All of our friends had them. And then we would just write about what we were doing that week. And
listen, I'm embarrassed when Facebook does the reminders of 12 years ago on this day and it says what your status was. My friend and I do screenshots on our phones and text them to each other. And we're always like, why were we so dramatic? Like,
I know.
What the hell are we even referencing? Like, it's cryptic. A lot of inside jokes or cryptic crap where you're just like, somebody please ask me a question about my exciting, not exciting life.
Yeah, and it's the cryptic
It's mortifying, posts. But I refuse to delete them, which is an option. I'm like, no, I want to look at this and revisit this awkwardness every year.
Oh.
Every year on this day.
Is there anything else we want to talk about? Any favorite moments? Anything else?
Can we talk about the soundtrack in the movie?
Yes, Lord, yes.
So good. And it's Rain and Men.
Oh my God.
I'm Every Woman. It's such a good soundtrack.
It is such a good soundtrack.
I love it. I love that. And the line that always sticks with me, like, and I love it, that Bridget rejects Daniel when he says it, is he said, for whatever reason, if I can't make it with you, then I can't make it with anyone.
Oh, God.
I mean, who's going to interpret that as being romantic?
That's almost like, you know, the Mr. Darcy line in the book where he's like basically telling her how much he loves her and how it's against everything that is in his person, everything that's in his person, and like his family wouldn't like any of this, like worst proposal ever.
So bad.
That's what I felt like they did, but they put it on a different character in the movie. Because when he says that, you just want to punch him so hard in the face. It's like,
oh yeah.
Ha, how is it supposed to make anyone feel good about themselves?
Right.
Like that scene, I do like that scene in the movie though, where she walks away from both men.
Yeah.
Because they're fighting and then there's just this like bit of ugliness from both of them. And she's like, I'm out. It was like the mic drop before mic drop was the thing.
Mm-hmm. I love how excited her friend Tom gets about there being a fight between two men.
I love Tom. He's swiftly
when he runs
my
around, he's
character.
Like, it's a fight. I love the scene when they go to the, is it a rookery? When they go, when she goes on the mini break weekend with him and they go and they're rowing in the boats.
Yeah.
What the heck is that thing called? They have a name for it in the movie.
I don't know.
It's called something rockery or something. Okay. Anyway, they go away together. And I just like the dynamics of them. Like when they're rowing the boats in the movie.
Yes.
Where they're quoting poetry and they're talking. I love the scene where he falls out of the boat and he stands up in the water and he's still got a cigarette in his teeth, but it's broken.
That's peak Hugh Grant moment.
That is my favorite scene probably in the whole movie.
That movie and Love Actually. Just,
oh my God,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Favorite scenes in the book or the movie? Or both?
I love when she talks about to her friends about how Darcy said that he loved her or he liked her just the way she was and how they are all just so struck by this. And this is something that they talk about all the time and they reference it all.
I love it in the movie where they toast her on her birthday and they say it just to kind of like niggle in there with their finger and they're like, to Bridget, just is she just the way you are or something like that. And you can tell like Darcy's character gets what's going on, but Bridget's trying to be like, oh my God, the big eyes and like, you guys.
The blue soup.
I love that. I love the whole cooking scene where she does the food processor and it blows up everywhere in the movie. Such a good
She's scene. So resilient. She's not Elizabeth Bennet, though.
No, she's not. Mm-mm. She's not.
As much as I can see sort of like a loose adaptation, she's not. She's kind of more
she's not
like
strong
Lydia.
Enough. Yeah. She's flakier.
Lydia had that too in Pride and Prejudice, where she like ruined her whole family and it just rolled right off her. Like stuff just kind of. I was thinking this was a little Emma. Maybe she was a little Emma in this one.
Sort of yeah, like a little flakier. Yeah.
Do you think Bridget's like an anti-hero or anti-heroine?
I think so.
Yeah, I could see that. I love her. I just love all her imperfection, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be friends with her. Mm-hmm. She'd be the 100%. One that you'd be like.
You would text her at work and be like, listen to this crap. Yeah. Listen to what just happened at work. And she'd be like, oh my gosh, you want me to get me started about my boss? Uh-huh. You made me slide down a fire pole and everyone saw my tuchus.
I think pretty much I forgive anything about a person if they're good with words and they're funny. Like if they would text mm-hmm. me funny things. Oh, I thought also about
that. Is that why we're friends, Olivia?
Yeah.
It started with memes.
I thought about how probably nowadays Bridget would not be measuring her calories or her cigarettes, but she would be measuring like her screen time.
Maybe cigarettes and screen time, because we all know she's probably vaping now. She's checking to see how many e-cigarette vaping time she spends or whatever.
She wouldn't do 1-4-7-1 calls, but she would count how many times she checked her ex's Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she'd probably track likes.
Mm-hmm. She tracks 100% followers. 100%. Yep, yeah, absolutely. How many people looked at her latest like piece for this online publication she was.
And she would go on her TV job, uh-huh. their website, and look at what people's comments were on her, her clips about her and stuff.
Yes. She would have all her friends.
I think what I'm hearing is we need to rewrite it and give it a 2020 spin.
Yeah.
Helen Fielding, we're coming for you.
Yeah.
Do you guys normally do read-alikes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Can I make a suggestion?
Please do.
Okay. So when I got through the Bridget Jones books and wanted something similar, there's an author, Wendy Holden.
Mm.
Her books are British and they're really fun. Like it's
Wendy Holden.
Yeah.
Wendy
it's very similar to Bridget Jones. I don't think we have anything here. I think it would probably be something you'd have to mail. But again, it's early 2000s, it's British, the publishing world, all that kind of thing.
Mm.
So that would be a read-alike. And then probably the stuff by Candace Bushnell, mm-hmm. even though her stuff, like I said, it's can be a little darker than Bridget Jones.
Mm. And a little sexier.
Yeah.
And not for the faint of heart. And it's set, it's American and not yeah, British. But
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, New York City.
I'd say Beth O'Leary is a read-alike. She wrote The Flatshare.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
That's a good one. They're smart. They don't have that diary element, but they're smart British rom-com books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always talk about Dolly Alderton, but Everything I Know About Love by her. It's a memoir of growing up in England and her relationships and her friendships, and all of her books actually would be good for that.
I think I put that on hold and I'm still waiting for that book on Libby.
All right, everybody, go wear your granny panties and eat blue soup. And see you next time.
Talk to your besties about your crushes.
Yeah.
And drink some vodka and listen to Shaka Khan.
If you're over 21.
That's great advice.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Books We Loved, a podcast through the Troy Public Library. You can find more information about the books and library services we mentioned in the show on our website at troypl.org/podcast. If you would like to suggest a topic for future discussion, please email us at podcast@troypl.org. Thank you for listening and happy reading.